Welcome to episode 288 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Morgan Todd from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment about partnerships, championships, and connecting with fans in times of need.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host who is ready to help you put cheeks in the seats, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callinan, and I really can't wait to the time when we can put cheeks back in the seats. It's really heartening to see fans starting to return. I'm recording this just before the AFL and NRL Grand Final happening this weekend. By the time you listen to this, those games will be run and done. So I'm going to best wishes to everyone involved, especially Melbourne Storm, clients of Sports Geek. I know they've done a terrific job dealing with the team being away from Victoria for most of the year. To make the Grand Final is a tremendous effort. So no matter what the result, congratulations both to the team on the field, but then also all the people behind the scenes at Melbourne Storm, making sure to keep the fans connected, which is also part of the discussion today. My name is Sean Callinan. As DJ Joel said, you can contact me in a variety of ways. You can use email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. If you've got a question, a query, you want to know how I can help you, please reach out, use email. Or you can send me a tweet, at Sean Callinan. And as always, if you have a spare five minutes or even 2 minutes, you could leave a review for this podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can go to Apple Podcasts, sportsgeekhq.com/Apple Podcasts. It'll take you straight there. You can dive in, leave a review, 5-star rating, much appreciated. And I really do appreciate the people who have left one previously. Other than that, you can find everything at sportsgeekhq.com. That's where the podcast lives. That's where you can find the show notes. That's where you can find the links to all the guests and go into the archive. Before I get into my chat with Morgan Todd, I just want to give a quick recap of the sports biz Zoom calls. As I've had 1 week off, it's the first week off in about 30 weeks of having Zoom calls, two Zoom calls a week, because we are now moving to fortnightly. So every second week on a Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, and Wednesdays at 10 a.m. at the same time. That does overlap with times in your part of the world. If you're in Europe and or in Africa, it makes sense to turn up to the Tuesday night sessions, which is around lunchtime, your time, and the Wednesdays mornings in my time is also fits for the late afternoon, early evening in the US. So yeah, please come along. We've changed it a few times. We've done big topics. We've done niche topics. The last five we've just done covering all things digital to dollars. All of those are available as a replay if you're a Patreon subscriber. But what I want is to have people make an appointment viewing. So this week, October 27, 28, we are going to be looking at how digital and sponsorship has changed in 2020, which is actually part of the discussion in the conversation today with Morgan Todd, for the good. So what things have worked? What things have worked in 2020? So that's what the discussion will be. We'll do another two calls. If you can't make it, as I said, you can watch the replay. And then we're going to be running them every 2 weeks. And what we're going to be doing is also deciding the topic at the end of the calls. So November 10, 11 and November 24, 25, we'll be having two more calls. Please set a date, mark it down your calendar, go to sportsgeekhq.com/Zoom calls and book in and come along. And understand, one, for those of you who've been to one or two of them, one of the reasons we've gone to fortnightly rather than weekly is people are starting to get busy. Work is starting to come back. Sport is starting to recover, which is great. I'm loving getting people apologizing so they can't come along. So once every 2 weeks, take an hour, network with people, learn what's happening in different parts of the world. Come along to Zoom calls. I'd love to see you there. Sportsgeekhq.com/Zoom calls is how you can book for the next one. And also a very big thank you to everyone who has come on board as a Patreon subscriber to support what I'm doing here in the space, in the podcasting space, and the time put in to run Sports Biz Zooms. I really do appreciate it. You can do so with as little as $4 or $5 a month, or if you're a business or a startup that want to promote your wares and what you're doing and show support for what I'm doing in this space, you can also do that. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. And like I said, there's about 20 hours now of content of replays from sports biz Zoom calls that you can check out. So that's it. That's it for the plugs. That's it for the stuff around sports biz Zoom and Patreon. Wanted to get into my chat with Morgan Todd from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, where we talked a lot about partnerships, championships, and also just the challenges of 2020 that we've all faced. Here is my chat with Morgan Todd. Very happy to welcome Morgan Todd. She is the Manager of Strategy and Global Partnerships at MLSC. Morgan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Yes. I actually think the last time I was outside the country was in your part of the world where we met at C2 Montreal in Canada. So unfortunately, that's been the last time I was able to travel with life and pandemic. So it's good to catch up to discuss what your role is. So I guess before we get into that, how did you get into the world of sports and into your role at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment?
Yeah, that's a great question. I kind of stumbled into it because I did a post-grad program many years ago in marketing research, and my internship just happened to be with MLSE. So I got a good couple of months, got my feet wet, and went out on a couple other adventures into advertising and public relations before deciding that this was really where I was supposed to be. So I've been back at MLSE for coming up on 3 years now, after all of those other adventures, and it's definitely the place to be. Sports is where my heart lies for sure.
And so I love the description you've got in your LinkedIn. I speak marketer, geeks, statistician, hashtag formula and sales, and comfortable doing it all in 140 characters less. Old school Twitter. I don't like this 280 characters. I like the succinctness of 140 characters.
Agreed.
So you really came at it from a marketing strategy point of view and now into partnerships. How do you think, I guess, the marketing angle that you've come to it has helped you in the partnerships role?
Yeah, it's an interesting role because when I was sold on the position, it was kind of framed to me as the best of both worlds. And there are so many great things about being a marketing strategist over in the advertising world, where you get the flexibility to work on so many different clients in so many different categories. You get to understand the consumer from so many different angles and try to influence their behavior for so many different challenges. But in our world, we get to do that within the confines of four key brands that we get to work on. So you get to become a real expert on all of our fans and get to know them inside and out. And it takes you one level deeper. So it's really nice to have that flexibility where you get to work on so many different partners and categories all the time between pitching and supporting your roster of partners. But you also get the safety and the sandbox to really dive in and get to know your properties even better. So some days you're the client and some days you're the agency pitching them. So you really get to flex in a unique position that I don't think exists anywhere else in the world on that front.
And talking about a unique position, MLSE is a unique business. It's a beast of a business and it has multiple properties. Of all of those properties that are under the Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment banner, which ones do you look after or are part of your remit?
Yeah, so from a sales perspective, we definitely work across the full roster, which would include the Raptors, the Leafs, the Toronto Argonauts within the CFL and Toronto FC. My day-to-day portfolio is what we call Team Red. So I'm on the Raptors and TFC, which are arguably the two sports that resonate the most with me as a fan as well. So I'm very lucky in that sense. It's also really exciting because it's two of our more diverse fan bases. So there's so much to learn about every element of those fans and how they change and what resonates with them. So I'm really lucky. And not to mention, we've got a couple championships under our belts in the last couple of years. So we're definitely riding the momentum between both properties and hopefully looking ahead to another MLS Cup in a couple weeks too.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it. I think the last time that I caught up with the Raptors, a good friend of both of ours, Joe Godfrey, talking to him about what he was doing across the same sort of properties. You've been lucky enough, the Raptors, obviously embraced by the entire country, but then going through that championship run, how has that as a property, changed in, getting that title, or something that the organization and the team has strived for so long? And then how have partners sort of, embraced the Raptors even more, if it's even possible?
Yeah, they definitely have. It's crazy. It's been a wild roller coaster over the past couple of years. We've been up on the upwards trajectory for a little while, but we just couldn't seem to sort of break through that ceiling. So last year just feels a little unreal to me. I have a poster right above my computer here in my office now, and it's about the champs running it back. So, as we look back to a year ago, it was just insane the numbers that we were able to see. Right now, even looking at our fandom, when we last looked at it, in the spring, we were at, nearly one third of Canadians identified as a Raptors fan, which is insane if you think about that in terms of a market. It's not really anywhere else like that in the world. And we just got results back recently, today even, that say that 50% of Raptors fans think that their fandom is going to grow in the next 6 to 12 months. So we're very optimistic. We've got a lot of momentum. The numbers are all there. We broke records across the board in terms of retail sales and numbers for people tuning in for broadcast. And that story is amazing. But what it was able to do, and we talked a lot about the Vince Carter effect back in the day when the property was kicking off, we now have a bit of the championship effect. So while people want to be a part of it because of their championship status, they're more interested in how it's affecting our community and how it's inspiring the next generation. How is it getting more people out there on the courts to play basketball, and how can I get involved to do some good in the community? It's an interesting time, obviously, because the end of our last championship run, we're in a bubble and things are all just weird around us. So while the championship narrative really took off last season, we were excited to hang the banners. We were excited to celebrate with our rings and the Larry O'Brien trophy. It's really been interesting to watch how Black Lives Matter has changed and how the Raptors have come to the forefront of that narrative, definitely down in the bubble with the bus and the shirts. That really came from the athletes themselves. And it's been really unique to watch our partners, while they were attracted to that championship status, it's almost that they're more attracted to this now and being involved in driving that positive social change. How can we get involved? How can we support this? What can we do to make sure that we're driving this narrative forward as well? So we've had, our 25th throwback anniversary last season, plus our championship status. Then we jump into a bubble, and now we're looking ahead to how we can really, positively impact diversity, equity, and inclusion. So it's been a lot, and in the best possible way. And our partners have been there every step with us. They've adapted quickly. They've been agile. They've been open to us, suggesting what really matters to the fan and how they can be a part of it in a really positive way. So it's been great. I don't know what's next for us. We don't know what the format of the season looks like, but it's great that we've got our partners that are really working with us and want to continue working with us because of our very values-based mentality that we bring.
It is one of the strange parts and unique parts of sport, in we're in a competitive environment and, chasing that title, that flag or that championship, depending on what sport you're in, is the goal. But in the partnership sense, you're selling that partnership with the fans, regardless of whether, because only one team can win a title every year, and you can't be banking your partnership success and your team success, on field and on court. But then when the opportunity does present, when you do have that win, it's sort of, you do have to maximize that, because it does attract potentially more partners. But it is that balancing piece, because you can't guarantee a win, and you don't have, you're not like a player. You don't have performance bonuses on championships. You've got to try to smooth it out. So it's a terrific opportunity and a lot of work and, making hay while the sun shines type of thing. But also, what is the broader piece? What are the broader pillars of what you're selling, which is, our fan base, how well we know them, their affinity and how much they're tied to us. And then this other part, which you were just mentioning there, the corporate social responsibility and why partners become partners. What you were just talking about there about the community work and Black Lives Matter and the support of the community in COVID has been a big part of what's happened this year in, the pivot. Obviously, you can't do stadium activations and all of these things that you can't do, but you really had to lean on that. On that pillar and that part of all the work that you've been doing across all the different different teams, and your partners pretty much, they realize they want to be giving back and supporting the community. So become that vehicle for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting landscape. We've, you know, COVID hitting and social justice issues hitting the forefront, very similar in timing. Our partners, we thought, pivoted very quickly. You know, we connect with all sorts of different people from other franchises across North America and in Europe, and we're constantly asking them, what are your partners saying? What are your partners looking for? What are they doing? And we've seen everything from some markets where nothing has changed whatsoever, and you have regular sales, new partners coming on board, sort of status quo. And on the other side, you've got markets where everything just stopped and there were no new partners that were interested in investing. The current partner roster wasn't comfortable with using up any of the value that they had invested within their partnership. So it's really interesting. It's all over the place. We've been very lucky that our partners, you know, are very strategic in a lot of sense. They're very sophisticated in the Toronto market. So when we bring new opportunities, new digital ways of reaching our fans, we always say fandom doesn't turn off. When the season stops, when the game ends, fans are still engaged. They're engaged 24/7, 365. So just because our seasons aren't on right now, our fans are still open and engaged, and they're still checking their Instagram every day. So what are we doing to get their attention and keep them engaged in a way that's very purposeful, and we're listening to what they want to talk about? It would be a little bit naive of us to be continuously putting out sports stats when COVID originally hit and people were panicking to think about their own health and their own family and how to stay engaged and what they were going to do at home. So, you know, we pivoted quickly and we said, we're going to scrap. We had pieces that were already filmed and ready to go out that week when everything shut down. And we said, let's stop for a second, but let's start to think about how we're going to create content that's going to lean into all of these themes. So we've been very lucky in that sense.
And that was that board. Like you're able to lean in to community initiatives you're already doing, like your Real Food Rescue with Hellman's. It's like, oh, we're already doing that. And it was sort of like, you know, further down the list of, oh, these are things we're doing for, you know, for the community. But now they're super relevant and super needed. And there are people in, you know, desperate needs. And so it was a matter of, one, we'll amplify that, you know, that as a campaign, but do more, like, you know, the Bring Toronto Back campaigns that you brought out as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, in those first couple of days, we decided that the arena probably wouldn't be open for a while. And we have so much fresh fruit and vegetables and meats and all sorts of food coming in on a daily basis. So we had already acquired a lot of it. And without those games, you know, there was supposed to be a Leafs game the night that everything shut down. So what do we do with this? And exactly like you said, we learned from the Real Food Rescue that we did with Hellman's, which collects all food that would be wasted within our arena every single game day and donates it back to the community. We took that and we made an even bigger program because we had an understanding that there was a strong need in the Toronto community for food that would go to support local shelters, our frontline heroes, all sorts of people. So it was a really interesting program that was built cross-collaboratively across MLSE. It's definitely not a partner-first initiative. It was so many minds at the table, but when it was first ideated upon, we thought it was such a great story that we had built this all over Zoom and we had connected remotely, which jokes now look where we are a couple months later, well, this is how everything is built. But, you know, we built it first and then we rallied our partners and took it to them and asked if they would like to get involved. And across the board, we saw so many partners come into the mix and provide food and monetary donations and resources and volunteer hours. And we were able to rescue so many meals that we were able to give out into the community. And even today, you go out and you've run into a nurse on the street who made happen to work for our local children's hospital. And they're so thankful for, you know, those meals that came when they were in their most stressful moments.
So what I wanted to, I guess, ask you next is, like, everyone sort of went through that process of the initial shutdown and the adaptation of stopping activations or stopping content initiatives and reassessing. And then everyone started to look at what is the road back, like whether it's getting the teams back on court with, you know, MLS is back tournaments, the NBA starting up a bubble and starting having a plan of somewhat regularity will start coming back. How did you go from, I guess, you know, firefighting and crisis mode to hey, what's this new normal? How do we re-engage our partners? How do we adapt what we might have done? What was that period like for you and your team? Like, I guess, working across functional teams of, you know, the digital folk and talking to your partners. What was that period like? Again, like everybody, doing it, working from home via Zoom, you know, your Slack or your Teams, you know, firing up like crazy. What was that period like?
It was interesting. It felt a lot more organized than one would expect. A couple of weeks before we even knew that MLS, they were the first league of ours to return, that they would be back, someone in our analytics and business strategy team thought, why don't we go through an exercise of looking at just what we owe all of our partners so we know what our canvas looks like and we can start to make sure that we're communicating with them and we know what the assets are. So we went through that process. And luckily, when COVID first hit, we also started creating on-the-fly processes in order to create new content. What do the approvals look like? How does the brainstorming look like? What resources and assets do we have that we can play with? It was honestly such a challenge to think about how we would actually even, you know, engage our team when we didn't have anyone in the bubble to capture any content. And the one
because that was a really strange period where all the sports stopped and your regular content plans just couldn't happen. There wasn't a game to do the recap or the game. And so the digital teams, and I know we were working with the digital teams, they got in this sort of panic mode to a certain degree of, oh, hang on, we've got to put content out. And so then they started ideating and doing great content. And for some of them, if they weren't connected to commercial, like they were just putting out great content and not connecting it with and potentially, in some instances, like over-delivering, like they got into make-good territory so quickly. You go, oh, we'll do this and we'll do this. And, like, and I was like, well, hang on. Like, we don't know how long this is going to be. And also, the rest of the season will come. So there is a whole bunch of assets that will be changed that we've got to do. So it was a real balance of, oh, we've got to get stuff out to the fans. But it's like, what, you know, what's this whole year going to look like? And it was a bit hard to predict. But it was like there was a little bit of either over engineer, like a lot of activity early on to go, well, hang on, it's sort of like this weird off season. We don't need all. And so it was really, because it was this hard stop of, you know, you're going from this much content going out to, oh, we'll do the same, but there was nothing supporting it. It was a real strange time. So having like working through and I guess changing your processes would have been really important to not to be able to make sure that you were delivering some stuff for your partners, but also for the fans.
Exactly. And just how we all work together. When you say cross collaboratively, it's hard to get those approvals when you can't just run down to somebody's office and get it on their desk in time. So those processes kept us all in track. And slowly over time, we were able to learn, you know, how we could actually access any footage of the athletes, what those social media posts may look like. You know, each league was different. The challenge to even just understand what our signage assets was chaos at first because they were changing all the time based on whether, you know, signage was even working on site. Down in Orlando, there were challenges with electricity just working within the bubble. So some days you could see all of your partner signage up and running properly during a game, and other days you lost 2/3 of it. So definitely a challenge. I think we've learned throughout all of this that agility is key. That whatever doesn't get used in terms of value is still there for us to use later, and we're still able to reach our fans in unique ways. So the patience that we've all gained and sort of the flexibility that maybe we wouldn't had in our normal four walls and our normal arena on any given day has grown immensely, which is great across all of our internal and external teams. Our partners have been there along with us. We've had to change plans 2, 3, 4 times the night before when things are getting up and running. So It's a lot of learning in a good way, and hopefully things that'll last even as we exit COVID, hopefully one day, and return to some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, I mean, MLSC is a super digital savvy organization and doing a lot of things in the digital space with partners. But we've seen this scene of obviously even put digital even more in the forefront. Have you even seen like even more partners that may have always been signage guys or teams that just do stadium activations or just do things that are, you know, non-digital start coming across and even going, okay, actually, if it's our only option, we'll go into the world of digital and sort of have that finally, that light bulb moment go off, go, oh, that's what you've been pitching to us for the last 6 years. Have you still seen more partners go, oh, we will try digital now and realize it is the way to connect with fans these days?
Yeah, and it's the perfect timing for us because a lot of the things that we were already working on are just coming into fruition with COVID. So we were set up for success in a lot of ways. While we already knew how to create some best-in-class content and best-in-class social features, we were, you know, rolling out an MLSE arcade at the time, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. We've hired two in-house game developers that can go on any one of our team apps and build a custom game for our partners that brings in their specific brief and educates our fans on exactly their key messages. But now more than ever, when a lot of our partners, especially in the CPG space, they can't sample in person. They can't drive to purchase just through a digital spot. So how do we actually engage our fans in a meaningful way to get them to actually give us our attention for a couple of minutes, 5-7 minutes? We've got them locked in on this game. They're playing it, and then they walk away with some incentive to go to their local retailer and purchase that product, whether it be through a special offer or a contest or incentive across the board. We've seen those really come into play and actually provide a lot of success for our partners. So there's that. We've been developing a lot of unique viewing platforms, one of those being Real Sports Entertainment, which is just in beta right now, to help our fans understand all the different angles they can watch a game through. They can chat with other fans during the game, something that we're very accustomed to doing on Twitter, but now it's all in one place. So it's a really unique platform that we're going to continue building and looking for partner opportunities to lean in and how to really leverage this.
And is that, I mean, and that effectively is, you know, out of the, you know, COVID creative, like people were watching a game in the bubble and setting up a Zoom account and chatting with their friends while they're watching the game because they can't be at a bar at a stadium. And so we're getting this mixed viewing method and the behavior changing to say, well, how can we adapt some of those behaviors into, you know, our fan ecosystem and what we're doing in a digital way? Like that's, you know, if you're being glass half full on a pandemic, which is tough, I understand, but like there's changes to the behavior and it has accelerated that digital consumption piece, which I think gives a lot of opportunities for sports teams.
Definitely. And as you said, there are things that we know are going to stay. They're not us investing in something that's just for the next little while. So as we look at fan behavior, everyone's moving into digital spaces. We're even just seeing, you know, Gen Z and millennial groups sometimes would rather watch a game from home because they can multitask and they can catch their favorite sitcom while they're still, you know, watching the game in real time, catch their sports highlights, engage with their friends. It's a very different experience than generations before, where it was like you go to the bar and you lock in for a couple hours and you go home and that's your only sort of sports experience. So as we think about how we adapt to continue to meet those generations' needs, that things like this will be exactly what allows us to reach them in that meaningful way.
Yeah. And then there's these, the other new pieces, doing things, you know, crazy, weird activation pieces in a social distance world, like having a drive-in and consuming it, like going completely old school. You want to talk to us a little bit about how that went?
Yeah, I think one of the benefits we had this summer was watching Europe go through this first with their return to football. And there were many drive-ins that were coming out across their markets, but also just the concert space in general. So in partnership with Live Nation Canada, who we work with very closely, we kind of thought about how we would bring that into our market and what that would look like. And we were in a really good spot having both Leafs and Raptors somewhat hitting their playoffs together, and that we would have what would normally be Jurassic Park or Maple Leaf Square becoming that iconic place for fans to gather. And there was a real need for something physical for them, as well as our regular concert season, which would normally happen at Budweiser Stage right next door to the location we chose for the drive-in. So we knew that there was this perfect storm and that there was an opportunity to really, when we think about the first program around food being bringing Toronto back to its feet, this was bringing Toronto back some live entertainment and that sense of physical gathering space. So it was really amazing. We had it right in downtown Toronto with the skyline across the background. As you're watching your Leafs and Raptors playoff games, the sunset was setting behind it. And something that made us laugh when we thought about it after was right across the road was one of the major hotels, because we were also the NHL hub city in Toronto and half of the teams were staying in that hotel. So as we were watching the Leafs play, all the cars would honk when a goal was scored and we're keeping up the other opposing team who happens to be staying right next in the hotel. So it was a little bit of a strategic move without meaning to, but unfortunately that run was a little bit short, but we were able to support our Raptors and engage our partners in a way with OLG coming on as a title partner, but many partners who came in to help us sample how to create fan experiences, programming that we would normally do in the square, we were able to sort of mimic what our fans were craving so much in a safe distance way.
Yeah, I mean, it's I saw the pictures. It was like a car version of Jurassic Park with all the fans there, and you know, the tooting of the horn, which is from my childhood years, going to a local football ground where all the cars would park around the oval, and every time there's a goal, everyone would beep the horn. It's that shared experience that we all want from sport, and so it's a great, potentially one-off in this time, but then it's also what does this look like as a satellite event across Canada for major games, and becomes another event strategy piece that you didn't have previously, because, everyone go, why would you do that? We've got bars. And it's like, oh, it's another opportunity, potential for your partners to come aboard. So I guess the thing, going forward, like coming into 2020, no one planned for a pandemic. Like, no one planned for a 3-month stoppage and playing in a different city and away from fans and all of that kind of stuff. 2021, we can plan for something, but we really, there's still so much unknown. So we've got all this knowledge of how we activate with fans and connect with fans when we can't be there. Obviously, Toronto is in a weird spot, obviously, with the separate Canada and the US about this week, that the Raptors may have to, locate in another part of the States from a travel restrictions point of view. How are those plans, coming together to talked about having to be agile. How are you having those plans together now, trying to figure out, not knowing when the season is going to start, how many games, where it's going to be played? How are those conversations happening with your partners now? Because it's not like this year was all about make good and trying to cover everything. Whereas next year, it's like, it's going to be another weird year. How are the conversations going so far?
It's, again, very mixed. We have a couple partners that we're going through our end of season reports right now, and we're looking back on what the weirdness was that we went through last year. And a lot of them they don't want to start planning yet. They understand that things are going to change and that there's probably some use in just waiting until we know what the formats are going to be and where the teams are going to be playing. So there's definitely a lot in that bucket, but there's a lot that are eager and are starting to understand the real value in talking to fans year round. So. Yep. We're trying to get a little bit more creative, I would say. We're looking to all sorts of other teams every day. We're just sharing on the fly ideas that we see that we love and we'd love to take into our market. So, how can we start to think about what lives beyond the Zoom call from a coach or a GM or a player, and start to think about how we lean into real life experiences? How do you, looking ahead to the NBA draft, how do you make something bigger than we've ever done before? As we approach that and actually give our fans a unique experience to engage with it. So it's a lot of brainstorming. It's a lot of throwing stupid ideas against the wall and hoping that we'll be able to figure something out.
Yeah. And is it really just a matter of deciding and creating the events and opportunities that you can control? Like, because you don't know when the season's going to start, but you can control. And, recently we are going to have new jerseys. What's the story going to be around them? How can our partners be involved? Like, they're the things you can control. Like, and you recently, launched new jerseys for next year for the Raptors. So you want to talk about, I guess, some of the stories behind them and what you're trying to do with them? Because they're the things you can control. Like when we have got a draft pick and try to create those events, manufacture otherwise, that you can potentially put your partners around, because you need some assurity of what they want to do.
Definitely. No, the jerseys are a great example. When we looked ahead to brand plans, a couple months ago, that was really the only thing that we were certain of. So it's been a really good moment for our partners to have something fresh to talk about and fresh to engage our fans over. With 5 new jerseys coming out in one season, it's something we've never done before, but we made a decision to space them out. So the first initial launch gave us enough of a buzz between our first 3 jerseys that were coming out, one with the Jordan placement for the first time, which has really excited fans with something new in the format there. And we'll have 2 more that'll come out into the fall and spring months ahead. So it gives us something to pulse, new stories to tell. We're taking a really unique approach this year where each of the different 5 jerseys will have a different narrative and a different persona and a different element of the Raptors brand. So, calling all fans to the true north is one of them, really leaning into this sense of our fandom and that unity that comes from diversity. We've got one that's really about the grit and the outsider status and that mentality that we've always had to be with the only Canadian team in the NBA, and that really outsider status that we're returning to now that we're sort of on the revenge to get back to our championship status. Another just being the icon and the leadership and being the only team with, representing sort of that Kyle Lowry mentality of the team. So we've got two more that'll be coming out. We're really excited. We're going to be leveraging tons of influencers, content, different ways of bringing it to life. So it's something that's good for our partners and something that they can help rally around and choose the story that, or the stories that they most resonate with from their own brand angle or their target. So it's been really great on that front. And ahead of that, as you said, like, we've got season tip off, puck drop, kickoff ahead. We know that there'll be draft days. We know that those regular moments of the season will hopefully come and go as we're used to. And if they don't, we'll just pivot again and try to adapt to what is in front of us.
Yep. I love the idea of the multiple jerseys. I mean, that's our gravitas jersey. We had seven jerseys last year just for the variety, and also to give them all names and different ones. So that's the Thunder jersey. And we came out with different themes around the different games when we wore that jersey. It allows you to have so much more storytelling around it. And then you can also be aligning partners with those stories that you put behind it. So, you know, the grit, resilience, you know, the true north, like, it gives you so much to work with to say, this is a type of partner you should be partnering us when our guys are wearing that jersey and it fits in with the campaigns. Like, that's where I really like the idea of, multiple jerseys and being able to tell different stories around them. I think it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it allows our fans to express their own different personalities through our team as well, which is something we've definitely been looking to the football culture to learn from. It's not always been a thing in North America to have so many different jerseys, but it's definitely something that's catching on. And the idea of such a big launch around them, we've seen so much success. We're looking across to the other sides of the world to help inspire us. So it's been, super exciting for our fans. Everyone wants to collect all five. So it's great for us in that sense. And I'm excited to even get one myself. Haven't done that yet.
Terrific. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. Been good to catch up. I want to close things off here with the Sports Geek Closing Five. I'm here with Morgan Todd. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do. It was a Toronto Maple Leafs game at Maple Leaf Gardens with my dad, and I was far too young to appreciate what I was there for. I remember I ate way too many snacks and felt very, very ill. So. Yep.
Those big popcorn buckets that you can practically
popcorn,
couldn't see
candy,
over.
Yep. Pop, all of the above. My dad just let me go wild because he was there for the game and was really tuned in. My mom was not happy about it.
That's right. But that's what a first sports experience should be, right? As someone who's like my kids.
That's why I know.
You've been to a lot of sports events in your time. Do you have a go-to food, or do you have a favorite food memory? I mean, the food game has definitely stepped up probably since that first game. Plenty of gourmet options available at your games. What's a favorite food memory?
Yeah, when I was actually an intern, I used to volunteer to sell pucks at Leafs games. And I remember that you got a food credit with it. And obviously, being an intern, my first thought was always to spend that on funnel cake fries. So, referencing poutine and being relevant to Canadians, it was a funnel cake bowl that was just layered with ice cream and whipped cream and chocolate. And that would be dinner. So I would still say that that would be my preferred.
Yeah,
sports game.
Very good, very Canadian, obviously.
Very Canadian. Yeah.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
I'm a Twitter girl. Live, eat, breathe Twitter. That's where I get all of my news from. That's where I follow all the athletes. That's where I follow all the sports media. So first thing, that's probably open before both my eyes are even open.
So this is this way you get to plug your Twitter handle. What is your Twitter handle so people can send you a tweet to tell you they've listened to this podcast? That was a perfect segue.
Oh, amazing. It's Mogtodd, M-O-G-T-O-D-D.
Very easy. Easy to follow. So Mogtodd, send Morgan a tweet to say you've listened and you'll read it tomorrow morning. That's you pretty much just said on right here on the podcast that it'll come through.
Exactly.
There might be someone that you follow on Twitter or read, is this or work with. Who is someone that the podcast listeners should follow and check out because there's someone that you admire?
I can think about this. I would say there's a woman by the name of Avery Francis, and I've been really engaged following her. She's just been changing how work culture is thought of. There, you know, just so many simple but really innovative ideas. So I would definitely give her a check. I think her company's called Bloom. And she's just really inspirational in how we think about how we all work together. So would definitely
We've definitely had a lot of change in how we work in 2020. So like, and working together in this apart infrastructure is something that we're all still learning too, right? So, you know, we do get Zoom fatigue, but it's like, how do you still connect with your workmates and get things done in this distance environment? It's really, it's both been challenging, but and also it's proven that it does work. Like we can get work done from home and things can get done. So it's going to be really interesting to see how work-life balance and changes over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months for sure.
Yeah, and how we take that sense of empathy. I think that's the most important message I've gathered from listening to her, is just keeping that reminder that we're all humans and that we all can take care of each other, no matter how we're working together remotely or together. Yeah. It's something that I've really admired in following her recently.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Mark Labuste, has written a book called Being Human along the same themes of if you're in that management capacity and working with people, he loathes the phrase human resources, like we're not, you know, we're humans.
Exactly.
And so it's like treat someone like a human and guess what, you get better results. You might have given a spoiler alert, but that's fine. I ask people what their social media platform is, their MVP, and you can answer it personally. Which you might have already done, but also put on your partnerships hat on and maybe the Raptors. What platform is working best for you with your partners is probably a good question from a social media MVP.
Yeah, I'd definitely say Instagram has been our MVP in terms of our brands. It's just the most influential. That's where we see most of our fan base is engaged. It's definitely not new, but it's just, you know, been the front runner for a while, I'd say. Something that I'm personally interested in and hoping that we can start to tap into with our partners as well would be TikTok. Yep. I know it's sort of been framed as that Gen Z younger audience, but I think we've moved so far and there's so much we can learn from how these trends start on TikTok and then eventually expand to reach all sorts of platforms. So really tuned in there and hoping that we get to play with it pretty soon.
And it is going to be interesting to see, you know, we've seen Instagram steal from Snapchat before and have success with stories, and they're trying to do the same thing with Reels. But I think that like there's a feeling that they've got there too late. Like TikTok is just this runaway beast at the moment on the content type and how it's plugging into trends and how quickly it is. It's going to be interesting to see how sports can get into that space authentically. That's the challenge that everyone has currently got. And it's that balance of, we've really got this great audience on Instagram. We could just do it here, but if we don't do it over here, have we made the wrong bet? So, I think it's something that's going to play out. And we record this, I guess on the day of, you know, a platform like Quibi is killed off, here we were potentially, you know, content teams were potentially looking at, should we have something on, you know, a platform like Quibi, and, you know, under 12 months and it's gone. So this is the world we live in, I guess. You've got to have bets on the platforms that are there and see how it goes.
No, exactly. I'm excited to start to think about the types of content that not only our partners and brands will be able to create, but our fans and our athletes. Everyone is a creator on TikTok, and you don't need the same resources to create something so polished as Instagram. So it's a lot more authentic. It's a lot more gritty. It's a lot more real. It's insightful. And it's just something very entertaining because it's fresh for a lot of people.
And I think the point there is also that every other platform that's been adopted has all been about how do we grow ours and how do we own our channel? Whereas TikTok, potentially it's how do we be part of a movement and how do we get our fans to create it? So, you know, if fans are creating TikToks around Raptors moments or Toronto FC moments, like that's a win. And then how do you leverage that? Because it's very, you know, it's very much UGC. And so then how do you do that in a campaign mode, again, in that authentic manner? Like, you know, so that's the piece that's going to be, one for people like yourselves and myself to figure out, like, what are those mechanics to go, oh, we've got people doing it. Oh, now we can repurpose it. And we're seeing TikToks on the big screen, you know, again, back in the future days when we get to go to a stadium. Like, but that, they're the kind of things that'll be, you know, really exciting, you know, because we probably haven't had, you know, we've had Kiss Cam, we've had kids doing Fortnite dances on the big screen. You know, we'll, no doubt when fans do return, we'll be doing the latest TikTok dance. That's what will be done on the big screen to engage fans. So
absolutely,
it's now it'll all be integrated in everything that we do.
Yeah, we'll have to practice your moves now so that way we're ready to be featured on the Jumbotron when everything returns.
I've had enough features on the Jumbotron. I really should stop doing it. But you can find me dancing in multiple sporting events, unfortunately, on the internet. So, I'm already up for it, and I'll probably end up making a fool of myself again. Morgan, where can people connect with you? We've said your Twitter, Mog Todd, with two Ds. Where else can people connect with you to say hello and tell them that you've listened to the podcast?
Yeah, I'm pretty much Mog Todd across everything. So LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, whatever it is, you name it, Mog Todd across the board.
Terrific, terrific. Please reach out, tell Morgan that you've listened to this podcast and say thank you. I really do appreciate it. Morgan, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much. This was great.
And I look forward to the day when I can come back to your fine country and catch a Raptors game or a Leafs game. And hopefully that is sometime soon, pandemic withstanding. So hopefully, they do open up borders and allow planes and all of those things. But at the moment, I just want to be able to leave my house and get out of lockdown here in Melbourne. But hopefully in the future.
Yeah, we'll cross our fingers sometime soon.
Find out more about SportsGeek's Digital to Dollars process at digitaltodollars.com. We'd love your support on our Patreon campaign. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon.
Thanks again to Morgan Todd. As she said there, you can send her a tweet, and please do. I really do appreciate it when people reach out to the guests. Morg Todd, MOGTODD, is how you can reach Morgan. Send her a tweet, tell her that you listened to the episode, that you enjoyed it, and ask a question. That's it for this episode. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, if there's a way that I can help you, whether it be in a consulting capacity, whether it's via a Pick My Brain session, a two-hour session where we dive in on your problems with your team, or if it's a way that I can help you find your next place in your career. There's a lot of movement, obviously, in the world of sport right now, and I've got some opportunities to connect people with the right people. So if I can do that for you, please reach out, whether it's via a phone call, just go to SportsGeek HQ. There's lots of links there to reach out and contact me. Until next week, thank you very much, and thank you for listening. Thank you for getting this far. And if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, I would truly appreciate it. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. If you're running right now or driving right now, just remember that. And when you get back to your desk, type it in. Check out the options in Patreon, and I'd really appreciate your support. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
We'd love your support on our Patreon campaign. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. Want to help drive more revenue from your digital efforts? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.